I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lenten Rouge Cycling Podcast, to the Giro d'Italia that keeps on giving from Genoa to Lucca, 180 kilometers long, and it looked like another sprint stage, but the first 60 kilometers was quite hilly. I thought yesterday the breakaway has much more of a chance today, or at least more teams should be interested, particularly when a lot of them, to quote Geraint Thomas, are getting their heads kicked in by Jonathan Milan. And realistically, you're not gonna win against Jonathan Milan unless you're Tim Merlier, who already did it, or maybe a Phil Bauhaus if he gets lucky. So as I said, hills at the start in the first 38 kilometers, then a longer climb, the Passo del Braco, 15Ks, 4% is gradual though, before a descent and 100K valley or 80K valley to come back, then a Monte Magno climb. 3Ks, 4.3%, 20Ks from the finish is the crest. Not that hard. No one should get dropped there. 3Ks, 4%, not hard before a false flat downhill run into the line in Lucca, where there are a few turns at the finish. We had some sprinters giving some interesting quotes last night, Benji, or after the stage. I mean, some not dealing well with the dominance of Milan and Merlier.
Yes.
Caleb Ewan.
Exactly. Caleb Ewan said yesterday, I don't know the exact quote, so I don't want to misquote him either, but it seemed like a low-key judging of his team members, saying that they weren't good enough, is how I perceived it. And in my opinion, yes, they didn't bring him to a competitive position, but Ewan himself is also sprinting worse from similar positions than Anjelkowski and Biermans, who have gotten better results with just as limited support when it comes to the sprint. So I feel a little lack of self-reflection.
Yeah, it was very surprising to hear him basically saying, oh, I'm not, you know, the reason we're not in a position for me to do the sprint is because we're, you know, maybe I've split ambitions. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but no offense to Cofidis, but I couldn't tell you who old Anjelkowski's train is, and he got a top 10. Mattis Mikkels was the lead out for Binnie. He got a top 10. Phil Bauhaus is here with Bahrain with split ambitions. He could have won if the barriers opened up. He came third or something in a stage. So I was surprised to hear it, especially after what happened at Lotto. I'm also, if you're Luca Mezgets and DeMarchi, who, by the way, are not allowed in the breakaway today. So like there's two things. You can have the best lead out in the world, and then, which is fine, but also like if the team is prioritizing you by not, this is a DeMarchi stage. This is a stage where Mezgets could win from the break. So if I was them, I wouldn't probably appreciate hearing that too much. But Jayco's problem to manage, I guess.
That's what we're talking about, the breakaway.
Yeah.
At the start of the stage, there's those hills like you mentioned, and those hills could create a bit of a harder to control breakaway, but we didn't really see that. We saw a four-man breakaway go up the road. Costiu from Arkea, pretty talented rider. What's your sentence when it comes to Zangle again?
Talented young French rider, yeah.
Talented young French rider on Arkea. Tarozzi, Italian rider on Bardiani. Luis Oschi from Group Bauma, and Simon Gieschke for Cofidis. So those four riders up the road, and gotta be honest, a bit of a snooze fest. We see the initial moment to the point that Ewan Costiu's like, well, his team calls him back, like Ineos did with Ghana yesterday. Personally, I think there's a difference between an Arkea rider doing that and an Ineos rider doing that, because Ghana could save his energy that way. There's no real value in that for Ineos. They're not here to show off their jersey. Ineos is a 40 million roughly budget team. They're a team with a lot of money. They don't care too much about broadcast advertisements, riding at the front of the peloton in the breakaway, stuff like that with Ghana. So that's not really value for them. For Arkea, they have limited luxury when it comes to being on screen. Yes, Biermans had a great sprint the other day on stage three.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if I would have called him back. You might as well try and go at it. Then again, that breakaway did eventually get caught, because we saw on the big climb, the climb that comes in the first half of the stage with still roughly 80, 90, 100 kilometers to go, 15 kilometers, 4.5%, 5% is my guess.
Long climb.
On that climb, Alpecin goes to the front of the peloton, starts pacing, and immediately in the first kilometer, we see a dropping rider, Jakobsen. What's your take?
Yeah, he's just not in good enough shape because, like, there's sprinters are not expected, a pure sprinter, to get over high mountain passes, you know, or climb even as well as Jonathan Milan does for a big guy. Milan climbs incredibly well, but there's sort of an expectation that they'll be at the level of Merlier's climbing. And there's a big difference between where Merlier's climbing is and Jakobsen's climbing. About on a 30-minute climb, there's about a 3.5-minute difference, which is huge. So Jakobsen, yeah, just not in good enough fitness. In the end, it didn't matter because Alpecin smashed. Ewan sliding, but he stays in there. He climbs pretty well. Merlier slides late. Does look like a decent gap, but then you got this 80K valley. And so a Trek going to put a rider to keep Merlier behind? Maybe. Maybe Visma would too. But in the end, the descent starts. I don't know who was pushing. And Merlier's back literally within 5-7 minutes of the descent. They just do a demon descent through the cars. And so Merlier's back. So no one's going to pace to keep Jakobsen behind. He's not been competitive in the other sprints anyway. And so it goes nowhere. Break court. Peloton's in the valley. Everyone's looking at each other. There's not much on.
Yeah.
And
before a new break arrives, we get an intermediate sprint. Groves takes an intermediate sprint quite comfortably. I'll spoil it already. Groves also takes the most point of the sprinters on the second intermediate sprint. But in that first intermediate sprint, there's actually a crash that happens, a bit of an odd crash.
Yeah.
We see there's sprinters sprinting for the actual points. And just behind that, in like the second bubble of riders, we see Laporte kind of falling through his bike initially. First few falling through his bike, crashes. And it looked like he had an Alpecin rider move up on his right side. He looks at the Alpecin rider to the right, and he looks back forward and seems to have missed a road surface irregularity, a little of a pothole, whatever, drainage, whatever it is. And that caused him to lose grip of his bike.
Yep, it was strange. Like, it caused me to come off the saddle, or I don't know, because his hand stayed on the handlebars or on the hoods. And yeah, he'll be thinking tonight, he'll be so angry at himself because it's such a silly crash. Because the Alpecin leadout's coming back, and he's just trying to say something, I presume a joke or a passing comment to the Alpecin guy, like an inconsequential thing, and turns his head and bang down. And that's another crasher. He missed his big classics goals and now crashes five stages into the Giro, and there were some big goals, and we'll talk about tomorrow's stage as well. And he's going to have a pretty sore night, but he was able to finish the stage, I think, but not able to contribute to the lead out, obviously. Well, it was still, like, he wasn't doing the lead out in the EIS, but behind, they're still going like 55 behind in the draft. So,
yeah, he's slowing down from initially positioning Poi in the wheel of the other sprinters, is how I perceive
the another crash
situation.
For Visma.
Exactly, and it didn't stop there because 32 kilometers to go, a crash happens, some riders hit a traffic sign. One guy had a little bit of a blood on his eyebrow, if I recall correctly, and the traffic sign was actually bent, which you got to come in with full force to do that. There was limited protection on that traffic sign. I'll put that out there, but that's not the crash we're talking about now because I don't remember the riders that were involved with that. The next crash was 25 kilometers to go, Foss on the floor, Woods on the floor with a teammate, I think Reisberg. And then we've also got Attila Valter, second rider from Visma Lisa bike on the floor. Not the first crash. Seemed to happen in the middle of the peloton, but it wasn't anything special. Looked like people hitting each other with wheels. Not physically, but...
Just overlap, just people moving into position, maybe someone coming back. And yeah, crash. I mean, Woods down and the mechanic couldn't find his bike.
Yeah.
I couldn't find his bike on the team car at all. And Reisberg was down, Valter down. Foss has already crashed in this race, and he already had a bandage on his right arm, and he's important to position in the final. He's behind the race now, and not to come back because we mentioned the re-break that formed?
I don't remember if we did, but there is a breakaway up the road.
So nothing happened.
Yeah.
Nothing happened, and it was like, okay, this is like a UAE tour with a headwind in a sprint where no one goes in the break because they can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Someone go, and it's actually two of the same teams that jumped in the first break, Cofidis, FDJ, and they're joined by Pulte and EF, and also two other teams that have been jumping in the break every day. EF, Pulte, Cofidis, and FDJ a little bit. Also, Polti have had a top 10 in the sprints with Lonardi. Kofod has had a top 10 in the sprints with Anielkowski. They're playing the odds. I don't know if FTJ did with Pithy or not, but they didn't. Pithy looks sick, or he doesn't look good.
Had a bit of a mechanical situation at the foot of the big climb at the start, and then had difficulties coming back. But
he looked bad.
That breakaway. Thomas, Valgren, Pietrobon, Paleni.
Yep.
That looks like a breakaway that you can do something with, because Thomas and Valgren are fast riders. Pietrobon, I've spoken about him as like a ChatGPT Italian rider that goes in breakaways, but he's a long man, dude. Like, you lay him flat and he can go from this wall to that wall.
I thought it was a joke breakaway. I went and had a sleep for an hour, honestly. And that's the beauty of this. I went and had a sleep. The peloton went and had a sleep. And what's what the breakaway does? They don't push. They get a gap of 1 minute, 1:30 max, and they just keep it there. And you've got this hill with 25Ks to go, 24Ks to go. And they keep that gap really tight. Seri paces for Quickstep alongside maybe Emmanuel, keeping it like pacing easy. Looks like it's all in check. They get to that false flat uphill, that short hill, and the breakaway with Thomas, and they just, Valgren, absolutely start smashing with that gap. And then they get over the hill and the gap's 1 minute now, 55 seconds. It barely moves. Trekker using Darnola with 20Ks to go, 17Ks to go with Bagioli. They're shouting at Quickstep, saying, put a rider, we're finished, put Czerny. They're looking at Czerny, saying, you got to come. Czerny says, no. Visma don't send Affini yet. Jayco don't send DeMarchi yet. And Darnola's pulling with Bagioli. Bagioli drops. The gap literally doesn't move for like 5Ks until the other teams realize, oh shit, Trek weren't just trying to finesse us.
Yeah.
They really can't bring this back.
Exactly, but it's also a situation of Trek wants to spend a limited amount of riders on it. They want to keep a lead out for the final sprint. So, and a lot of teams want to do that. So they don't want to risk losing. Well, they don't want to risk something to end up winning is how I see that. But it's also what we haven't spoken about. This is a second breakaway that forms in the stage. So those riders aren't up the road for half a stage before the last half of the stage. They're up the road for half the time than a usual breakaway.
And they didn't have to fight to get there. They literally just walked off the front. There's no fighting, no jumping. You just walk off the front and start riding, and then you don't even have to ride that hard until the climb. You ride at Peter Seri's pace. You basically only have to do a half hour effort.
And exactly this finish, the last 20 kilometers at the hill, like you mentioned, I vividly remember these were the old school Rémi Cavagna breakaway days,
where
you have that hill, because historically, I remember these type of stages have had breakaway winners in the past. So
they have. Last year, I swear Clark and DeMarchi nearly won this stage.
And in addition to that, the last 4 kilometers of the stage are also quite technical. We go through a bit of an urban environment with some cobbles on the road, corners left and right, which makes it harder for a gap to go down in those moments. But even before that, like you mentioned, the gap didn't really go down from the top of that hill until 10 kilometers to go. We went from 55 seconds to 57 seconds to 55 seconds to 50 seconds. And when I saw 50 seconds with 10 kilometers to go, I started to truly believe this breakaway was going to make it, especially because of all the shenanigans in the peloton. Because like you mentioned it, at first you've got Gebre controlling the breakaway during the stage itself. But then you see Dan Holo come to the front. You see another Domestique from Trek coming to the front. They don't want to spend Stuyven, and they don't want to spend turns on it because they want to keep them from the lead out. And then you look at other teams. Okay, we see two riders from I don't know, Alpecin come to the front at a certain point. We see other teams come to the front as well. One rider from Jayco, eventually another rider from Jayco, Calmejean comes to the front, starts working for Matis Mikkels. You've got more teams investing rider by rider, but it's still roughly 2, 3, 4 riders against 4 riders.
Exactly, and they're not even much stronger. Like, Affini comes to the front, he's pulling for 4Ks, 5Ks.
And he's strong.
He's strong, but he's not. Affini's riding against Thomas, Valgren, and Paleni chopping off. Thomas strong, Valgren was really strong in Romandy.
Pietrobon skipping,
but Affini's riding against 3 guys, and so to hold the gap stable is a huge effort. To then take 10 seconds a kilometer or 5 seconds a kilometer is virtually impossible when they're not, the breakaway's not gassed. They're not tired from being out there all day. And yeah, Clark and DeMarchi, if you go and look at the profile of the Giro stage 6 last year, it's not identical, but it's also the sort of stage where, again, if all the DSs would say, it will be a sprint. again, okay, it was in the end, but they nearly won. And we realized pretty quickly, Affini goes off, DeMarkey's off, there's no quick step, there's no Trekker gone. It's like, well, no Trek, quick step, Visma, Bahrain don't have the rouleurs. This ain't coming back. Alpecin invested their whole team at the start of the stage. They go forward with one guy, and then Kielik goes is supposed to be up next, and Kielik doesn't pull. The only team that actually put a big dent in this gap was Ineos, who came to the front before 3Ks to go because there was some Pave coming to town, there's a right-hander, etc. Ineos comes to the front. They're the ones that maybe put 20 seconds into it with Chef and maybe a Swifty. So, but then they're not going to ride to the line. And then, yeah, Kielik pulls off, and it's like, holy shit, Pietrobon's played a blinder. Like, Pietrobon, he gambled in that they wouldn't be caught. Bit risky, but in the end, he gambled correctly, and we have a left-hander.
And he's also a Paul Ticometa rider, which is not no disrespect to that. But the other World Tour riders in the breakaway might think, okay, he might be a slightly worse rider, so it might be logical that he's a bit more tired than us. So maybe that's why they were more okay with him sitting at the back than otherwise.
Yeah, because they don't know who he is.
Yep.
I don't know who he is. You know, like people don't know him. And you look at his
results. Pietrobon, my man.
But you look at his results, like he doesn't run top 30 in much.
Top five in a Giro stage, potentially winning it. It's worth it.
I mean, yeah, I actually think what he did is unusual. I actually don't think a lot of other riders would have done that. I actually think what he, because certain riders get put in situations that they've never been in for the last 4 or 5 years, and they probably will never be in again. The odds are that Pietrobon is never that close. I mean, maybe this guy turns into fucking Matthew Van Der Poel, but
maybe not.
How old is he?
He's 26 is my guess.
Okay, he's 25.
Close enough.
Okay, but the odds are he's not, you know, this is the closest maybe he gets to winning a Giro stage.
And I've got a similar feeling about Enzo Paleni, maybe. We don't know whether he's still a young rider. Younger. He can still grow, but they ride this final completely differently.
Yeah. And Pietrobon does like full win optimization. He does full win optimization, and, you know, credit to him. It's, you know, is it the nicest thing to do?
I don't care.
No, but it doesn't matter. You're Pulte with a chance of winning a stage. This is maybe the one chance in your life to win a Giro stage.
The game is the game, my friend.
The others should pull. And Tomas Pellegrini pulling full. Left-hander coming up, 600 meters to go. He takes a run at them, attacks hard, gets enough separation before the corner. Valgren looks. Nah. Tomas looks. Nah. And also the peloton's not close, like 15, 20 seconds behind. And I immediately thought Pietrobon has it because I was like, why would Pellegrini drag the two senior riders who have wins on the board back to Pietrobon? And maybe that's what Pietrobon was gambling, and it was the correct thing to do. And unfortunately for him, Enzo Pellegrini drags the other two back the whole way, and he blinks, drags them. Then Valgren jumps out of Pellegrini's wheel up to Pietrobon with 250 meters to go. We know he's going to catch him. But Valgren's now spent himself, and Tomas comes out of his wheel and takes the big W. Ahead of Valgren, Pietrobon still hangs on for third. Pellegrini actually on 3 seconds in fourth. And Tomas won, it's his first World Tour race, I think. He's won some other decent races before, like some French races.
He nearly won a Tour de France stage with that motorbike that one time, remember?
Yeah, he was good. He's been good in some French World Tour races. Be the Tour. Did he do it last year? No. Tour. He was in 20. He ran top 10 in the Tour 2022 a couple of times. Anyway, he takes a big win. He also takes Cofidis' first win of the season. First win of the season for Cofidis in all respects. Do they win any? Well, there's not really been any national champs, have there?
So I do want to mention, while you're looking up the national championships, tell me.
Well, no, this is their first win of the season. Yep. Not even an Alps Maritime stage. Not a. We're in May.
No, I mean the national championships are in June.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, they have mainly French riders, but sometimes there's like the New Zealand national champs, but they don't have a Kiwi rider.
Caden Gross, after the stage finishes, says the quote: "The break was just incredibly fast. I'm guessing with the help from the motos." I think to be able to give a quote like that, you need to know whether there was help from motors. I did not see that today. The motorbike was on the side and not the back, in my opinion, from my viewing experience, most of the time. So I think it's a bit dodgy.
The Peloton had the same moto? No, Luke?
Yeah.
So the Peloton had a moto?
Yeah. I think riders should know before they say such a thing.
I mean,
this breakaway deserved a victory.
We've seen some pretty egregious moto stuff in the classics, yes. Right? And we see it and we're like, that's way too close. Where yeah. You can't see the guy from the chest up. You only see him from the chest up just about.
Yeah.
There was no instance today where I was like, oh, that motorbike's way. Maybe the car's behind. What I think happened is the Peloton got absolutely finessed.
Yep.
And they got caught. They got caught napping like myself. And who dares wins. And that was the breakaway. And the guys that jumped probably thinking they get nothing out of it. I don't know who it was. Whether it was Valgren, whether it was Tomar. I don't know who it was in that break that told that had the strategy to go easy and then nuke it. But it was the Magnus Cort special. So I'm assuming it's Valgren.
But it could also be that it's part of like... We can say it's a rider, but could also be, we also see it in EF a lot in general. So maybe it's Team Car that knows how breakaways could potentially succeed in one of these teams. Maybe EF, maybe Groupama, stuff like that. So yeah, credits to the riders, 100%.
Yeah.
I was rooting for the breakaway here because this is also a lesson for the tier two sprinters. I consider Caleb Ewan a tier two sprinter considering his positioning issues in this race.
Generous.
Pure speed, he's pretty fast in my opinion, but... He's a tier two sprinter, in my opinion, in this race. So when it comes to that team, the Marquisieu could have been in the breakaway. That's an option. Plenty of other teams like Intermarché could have been in that second breakaway as well, in my opinion, because Binyam is out. And you spent Calmejean to try and go for Matthijs Mikkels, but you could have been in that action again. I'm going through the other sprinters that I can think of right here.
Milese instead of Gaviria.
Yeah, Bauhaus I'm relatively okay with Bauhaus, for some
I
reason.
Think can, Bauhaus I think can win, you know, like yeah. He really was
he
close.
He needs chaos. Astana with Max Gunter. That's breakaway options for the team, in my opinion. Tudor Dainese. Gotta be in the breakaway, in my opinion.
But the thing is, if the break... I mean, the Decathlon haven't been jumping. Vendrame, I know maybe he crashed, but Tranchant. This was a great break for Tranchant in Decathlon. But
he looked a bit meh yesterday.
Oh, okay. If the break is any bigger, probably they take it more seriously, and then they never win in the first place. So, like... You can say in theory, oh, okay, then 10 teams should have jumped in that valley, but then, actually, no, I think they could have. I think they could have. Like, why not try? You're more likely than beating Milan. Like, beating Milan for a lot of these sprinters seems really, really unrealistic, except for Merlier and a couple of others, maybe. Even Israel Benji. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you rather have had Riley Pickrell or Nick Schultz?
Even Vernon in the peloton.
Yeah, I mean, Vernon's good, but is he going to win?
And did he crash today?
He had a mech or mechanical. Something. He came back, climbs well. But yeah, it's a wake-up call to a lot of these teams. And all it's kind of what we've been saying, that you got to be in it to win it.
Yep.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When it comes to a lesson for the sprint teams and the peloton, that... You're going to have to risk your lead out in moments like this to have a chance at winning. Little Trek is included in that, but other teams as well that kept their lead out back because they're like, it's also like a if one team does it, the other team will do it as well. And if one team puts their lead out in, the other team might consider doing it as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like looking at each other and getting fucked over because of it.
I think Trek also, Trek bluffed today, but also maybe they were happy to lose the stage and teach everyone a lesson for the upcoming sprints, which is that they're not going to spend six guys to bring you back and have no one for Milan. And they already won a stage. They already have Ciclamino.
And Milan kind of needs that positioning based on what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, so Trek didn't need it. as much. Visma, Bahrain, Jayco, they needed him way more than Trek. And so why Trek are thinking, well, why are we doing everything? Okay, they have the big favorite, but...
Very shortly, Tronchon crashed before the Grande Partenza, and that's why he has knee issues.
Ah, okay, fair enough. In the sprint behind, it was Milan that won comfortably. Ewan second, Bauhaus third. Well, no, sorry. Milan fifth, Ewan sixth, Bauhaus seventh, Merlier eighth, Coy ninth, Mikkels tenth. So Mikkels actually quite good.
But not good enough to say we're going to go all out for him.
No, no, I was surprised.
Hedge your bets, breakaway plus sprint.
I was surprised to see Karmazin pulling. I was like, fucking hell, like it's...
Well, at that point, in my opinion, you might as well try.
Yeah, you may as well, you may as well.
What are you risking? It's not like you...
And if you did and you catch the break, you would have had... Can I count? He would have had 20 more UCI points. But then again, I think other sprinters might have tried more. But yeah, another great sprint stage. Like, they keep on stacking up. The stages have been really, really good. Tomorrow's stage from Torre del Lago Puccini, is it Puccini or Puccini? Viareggio to Rapolano Terme. 180 kilometers long, 64 kilometers flat as we go further east inland. And then we start to hit some proper hills, actually. 8.6Ks, 4.6% the Volterra. Then some punchy hills. An intermediate sprint for Caden Groves on top of a punchy climb. More rollers. And then this is way less than gravel. The Tour de France gravel stage is way more than this.
12 kilometers in this one.
Oh, that's nothing. It's actually an annoying amount. It's like, how much do you change your equipment for it? Because like the Tour de France gravel stage, you run the full 32 mil tire spec.
Yeah.
Tomorrow it's like 12. Yeah.
It depends on where you want to make the difference, eh?
Yeah. I think if you're a GC guy, you run it so you just don't puncture. Okay, you lose maybe 10 watts, but you don't want to puncture. Anyway, the gravel starts with 45Ks to go, 50Ks to go. There's an uphill and it's uphill. 3.3Ks, 5.5% gravel. So with the rolling resistance, it's effectively maybe a six.
That's the second one, right?
Oh, it kind of there's barely any space between
them. The first one is Vidrita, and the second one is the one you're mentioning. The first one is 4.4 kilometers. It's part of Strade Bianche. The second one as well, 3.3 kilometers, 5%. And after that, it's kind of a bit of a fake valley, undulating, I would say, for the next 25 kilometers until we get to the Pievina, which is with about 20 kilometers. That one's 2.4 kilometers. But we got a note,
descent
5 kilometers to go. Yeah, there's a descent in that last segment, but 5 kilometers to go, there's a mural with a 20% segment in there. And I spoke to Plap last night, and he said it's a pretty bad one.
Yeah, Serre di Rapolano, 700 meters, 10.6% average. So even without that pinch, it's looking like you know who could launch there. And with that with that information that it's actually so got even steeper parts, I'd watch out. The gravel is not that bad. There is the descent.
Mm-hmm.
There is an 8K basically straight gravel section, which, you know, you puncture there, but there is time to come back.
Yeah.
There is time to come back of how many kilometers in that on the asphalt? 25 kilometers. Okay, there's 40 minutes to come back before the third gravel sector where there's a bony.
I'll be honest, I see breakaway stage in front of me.
Has to be.
And in addition to that, I see the biggest risk being the technical income of the gravel segments, the run into the other gravel segments, sprints there. Ineos will try and keep Thomas safe. Yoyi will try and keep Pogacar safe. The only rider that will be willing to attack on a stage like this is Pogacar. It could be that it is literally on the last muro. It could be that he goes crazy and goes earlier. But will he do that knowing that his team hasn't been showing the extreme strength across the boards? That's slightly risky against an Ineos team that on paper on this parkour. Thomas is good on gravel.
Yeah, this ain't Strade Bianche. I don't believe in 130Ks in with basically the first gravel sector he's going to ride away, especially when they got good rouleurs for a 30-minute asphalt valley afterwards.
But please, Poggy, do it.
If the clear thing for Pogacar here, I mean, he can still take... The clear thing for him to do is
muro.
Keep the breakaway in check, smash the muro, take 6-7 seconds on top, take the 10 bonies. It's also not flat at the end.
Well, if the break wins, you won't get the bonies, eh?
Yeah, I know. They got to control.
Oh, yeah. But wow, really? You're going to go for the stage on this?
If you're UAE, why not?
I wouldn't do that. This is one of those stages where I let the break take the jersey. I don't know what random rider. The Marchi takes the Maglia Rosa kind of vibe. Can wear it for a few days, and on Prati d'Itivo, I'll take it back.
You're on the TT.
Because good luck controlling Prati d'Itivo, harder to control breakaway.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. What would they be thinking of doing?
Well, I think with the TT coming, they're going to give this to the break.
You reckon?
I'm going to risk it for the biscuit. I'm saying this is break.
I think so too. I mean, if you're Ineos Benji, do you really want G going to that finish with Pogacar, with the bonies in play?
No.
So,
well, they're not going to do anything here. They're just playing defensively. TT tomorrow, try and get that TT in. Is TT tomorrow? TT tomorrow.
But Narváez should be in the break, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so. It's an option.
And Conor Swift.
But to me, Thomas GC is more important than any other decision in this race for them. So I couldn't care less if they send Narváez in the break or not. It's an option.
But Narváez in the break maybe makes the break more likely to win. So.
Yeah, fair. I agree with that.
Yeah, so I would put Narváez or Conor Swift in the break.
Or even Ganna. Sorry, but...
Nah, he'll conserve for the TT the next day.
Yeah, that's true. He will.
Even though...
Chef as well.
Ganna, this is a big chance for Ganna this stage, the gravel. Like, I'm not sure... Well, hold on.
The TT is also a big chance for Ganna.
The TT? Oh, it's the uphill one. No. He should go on the break. He can't win that TT. He got no fucking chance. There's a climb in it.
I think he's better than you're considering, I might be overrating him.
1.3K is 11% against Poggi, and then it still goes uphill.
1.8, that's a three. That's an individual pursuit, my friend.
Yeah.
After a time trial of how long?
G will beat him in the TT.
I think it's fair to I can't choose. I wouldn't. I think Ganna would like to save his energy for the time trial, but...
I think that's a mistake.
I think this would be a nice option in the breakaway.
Yeah, I think he's more like... But that's what we think. I think you're right. He's more likely to conserve for the TT. This is... Let's look at Danny Van Poppel.
Yeah, but nah.
Who else?
He ain't doing it.
Pithy, but he looks no good.
Is this not why they brought Jonas Koch? He can climb well. He can win at a sprint at the end of a stage, my friend.
Jonas Koch can do anything.
Except this. Except winning.
Quinton Hermans. Very nice stage for him from the breakaway. Alexei is in GC Luchenko. Scaroni Velasco. Very, very nice for them. Looking down.
Vendrame.
Valgren again.
Clark.
Riley Pickrell. Good sort of rider for this. Who else?
Going through the list as we speak. Trentin,
Meyerhofer climbed very well the other day. Pasqualon. You know who would have been maybe the favorite from the break?
Who?
Laporte.
Yeah, he would have been one of the names.
And he crashed today. DeMarchi, of course. But I have my pick, Benji.
Go ahead.
Julien Alaphilippe.
I would really enjoy seeing Julien Alaphilippe go for this stage and potentially win it. I'm going for Quinton Hermans.
Yeah, Hermans. I mean, he had to do a lot of work today.
I'm proud of that pick.
But he looks good. And so we've both gone with two, like, 65-kilo guys.
Yeah.
Is that because of the final... I think I've... Because the break will come to that final Muro.
Killich? Nah. Is more of a big boy.
Well, he won Limburg, didn't he?
Antwerport Epic, no? Was he close at some point?
Yeah, Killich. I mean, if you put him in the break with Conchi too...
You can't send half your team in the break, dude.
Why not?
Try it.
Ewan Kostia will be in the break as well. He's quite strong for Arkea, but I think it should be the break. It should look pretty good. Yeah.
Lamperti?
Oh, is he here?
Yes, he is here. So he took 1 point at the intermediate sprint today, and that's when I realized Lamperti's here.
He climbs okay as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He came second on the Al Kuryat mountaintop hilltop finish in Oman behind Finn, and Finn was moving, so he must climb okay. He beat Ulisi on that. Okay, Lamperti's a good option with Alaphilippe. What about Milan in the break?
I'd like to see it, but every other sprint is going to be on its wheel.
Surely when they sent Sturven to the Giro for the lead out, this was the one they said to him.
This is the Sturven stage.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
We completely skipped over Sturven.
Well, I always like Trek.
Honoré is going to be in the break most likely as well.
Mm. I think it could be quite nice.
Yep. So watch the breakaway formation, then come back when the gravel kicks off.
Which GC guy has a shocker?
I don't think there's going to be much.
You don't reckon?
No, I don't see it. Lorenzo Fortunato. Just naming someone.
Yeah. 16Ks from the last gravel sector to the finish. If you do have a chain off or something, we probably can come back just before that final punch, but it's going to be stressful. It's sort of an annoying amount of gravel. Hopefully they all get through it unscathed.
Yep.
And hopefully Poggy attacks them all on that punch anyway, just because he's bored. hope you enjoyed the recap of stage 5, and we'll see you with the watch along of stage 6 of the gravel when the gravel starts. So maybe a little bit earlier tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Ciao.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.